From the basement of the Bob and Tom Studios, it's That Josh Arnold Podcast. Boy, oh boy. If it isn't that time again, that's right. Time for another chat, another sit down, another tete-a-tete. Oh, how about you? Look at you. Oh, my gosh. Hello. Nice to see you. Boy, we've got a good one today because of our guest. A very special person. A very talented, bright, and lovely individual. And what better way to spend one of the first weeks of spring with... then with this wonderful guest. I'm talking, of course, about a guest that needs no introduction. It's you! Yes, that's right, it's you. That reminded me of, I was watching a comedy special that Rodney Dangerfield was hosting. It was like a young comedian's thing years ago. And Rodney went up between acts and he goes, "This next act needs no introduction." And then he just walked off the stage. And I'd never seen that done before. I don't know that Rodney invented that. It seems like it would be very old. But it was the first time I had seen it. And it made me laugh. If the person needs no introduction, why are you introducing them? Very funny. A very simple joke that this simple man enjoyed. Man, oh man, Easter week. It's upon us in just a few days. I enjoy Easter a lot. The weather tends to be a little ideally we'll have some sunshine and some warmer temps and get out there and watch the kids hunt for those eggs and obviously plenty of religious components to Easter as well. And if that's your thing, great. If it's not, great. I hope you still get some good family time. And I tend to do both over the weekend. And I enjoy the I don't know how deep into this I want to get, but I've got my own relationship with a higher being, if you will. And so I celebrate that element. And then, of course, the family element, though, is really where I just love that. So however you're comfortable, spend some time with the family. Easter was always fun. I have a ton of cousins, and so the Easter egg hunts were always big events. And there was a mixture of dyed hard-boiled eggs in the hunt, and there were also those plastic eggs that were filled with candy or coins. And occasionally you'd pick up a plastic egg in Grandma and Grandpa Arnold's backyard, and it wouldn't rattle. And you'd go, "Oh my gosh, there's folding money in this one." And sure enough, you'd open it up and there'd be a dollar or... Whew. Every now and again, a five. And to find that was a big deal. So my grandma would fill, and I actually talk about this in my act, or used to in my stand-up act. My grandma would fill plastic eggs with M&M's. One of three things. They were either M&M's, Cheetos, just loose Cheetos that were very stale, or pennies, or dimes or nickels and stuff like that, any kind of coins. And every now and again, you'd find an egg that had all three in it. So a couple M&Ms, a couple Cheetos, and a dime. And in my act, I would say, it was confusing. You'd open it and go, "What the hell's this?" "Oh, that's just Grandma's senile trail mix." Because that's essentially what it was. It was just this awful mixture of don't choke on that dime sucking the Cheeto dust off of it. Maybe that wasn't so bad a joke. Maybe I should put that back in. I always loved the Easter egg hunt and finding grandma's loony eggs, and God bless her. Hey, kids like snacks. Let's fill some of these eggs with snacks. Well, according to the texture and flavor of the Cheetos used, she filled those plastic eggs 3 weeks in advance because they were rough. But, oh, how sweet, how fun. And now, as an adult, I get to hide the eggs. And that is also, I mean, there's a lot of fun to be had there. Now, I'm not the cruel uncle that hides one that's totally impossible. That's just never going to be found. You guys still haven't found one. And but I will hide them out of reach, very visibly out of reach, so that the kids can see that there's an egg there, but there's just no way they can get to it. And that's when the deal-making occurs, for me at least. It's, I'll get this egg for you if you split whatever's inside with me. Okay. And sometimes I get a little candy. Sometimes I get a little pocket change. Ah, boy. I don't think I'm doing the family thing this Easter, though. At least I haven't been invited to any of my brother's homes. So maybe they're all having it. And they just said, you know what? We can skip Josh this year. I don't think that's the case. But maybe we will have, maybe we'll do something. An Easter egg hunt outside of the Easter season. Who's to say? That might be kind of fun, wouldn't it? Just like a weird, random June Easter egg hunt. who knows? But like I said, enjoy the weekend, no matter how you celebrate. And I know I will. And you know what? This is actually brings us to our sponsor for the week. Very appropriate for this time of year. Sponsoring that Josh Arnold podcast this week, candy. Oh, boy, isn't that what a treat candy is. I mean, as a kid, you just can't get enough. And as an adult, well, treat yourself. Enjoy a piece of candy every now and then. You know, it's as I've grown older, I've realized when I was a kid, I used to think, oh, my gosh, I could eat candy all day. But now that I'm a grown-up, like, finishing a whole full-size candy bar isn't what I thought it would have been. Like, when I was a kid, I'm like, oh, man, when I'm older, I can just eat three candy bars or whatever because I'll have my own money. I can do whatever I want. Nobody's there to tell me. Now, if I finish, like, a Snickers bar, it's not great. It's not. It's like, boy, I don't know. I don't know what that's about. And I'm a larger dude, so but I can't. Or if I have a whole Hershey bar, man, it's a lot. But man, one of those I kind of prefer the minis or a Reese's cup. Or I'm more of a chocolatey candy guy than I am a fruity candy guy. But they all have their place, don't they? Ah, feel like a kid. Enjoy some candy. I hope that you can enjoy some candy this week. And if not, if it's not for you, give somebody a piece of candy. Oh, and not in a weird, there may be a needle in here kind of way. But somebody that trusts you and that you try to give them a piece of candy. All right. I think, you know what? I've just gotten a letter, an email here from Candy. Yeah, this is the last time they're going to sponsor the show. Dang it. I ruined it. All right. I hope you enjoy a piece of candy soon. You know what I enjoyed this week? It's, I'll tell you that after we take our visit to Vocabulary Station. Ah, feel that breeze. Sticking your head out the window there as we cruise along the tracks. Construction's almost done. I'll talk a little bit more about that at the end of the podcast. But the construction around here is nearly complete and things are looking great. And we've got a special trip to Vocab Station today because we're not getting just one, but two vocabulary words this week. That's right. Why? Because one of them is so bizarre that it's one of those words where I go, there's a word for that? And the other one is one that you could use anytime. So since the one is so weird, I wanted to give one that is also a bit more commonplace. So what to start with? The weird one or the I'll start with the one that you could use pretty much any time. And some of you are already using it, I'm sure. Although it is kind of a what they call a $5 word. It's, I like it a lot. The word is nimbos, and it's an adjective. Nimbos. Now, some of you can probably already piece it together just from the nimb. But it means cloudy or stormy. Hey, you want to go play outside? I don't know. It's looking rather nimbos. Could start raining here at any minute. Nimbus is the type of cloud. So nimbos is cloudy. Nimbos. I like it. You think we'll get to shoot off fireworks later? Oh, man. It's supposed to be rather nimbos, so we'll have to see. Appropriate for this time of year when the spring rains are among us. Now, the second word is one I wasn't completely not aware of, and then when I looked it up, I went, huh, that must never be used. But for, I'll just get right to it. Holography, H-A-L-I-graphy. And actually, one person, if I come across a word that I've never seen, I will online try to find out how it's pronounced. One site said it was holography, and the other just pronounced it as holography. And it means a book about salt. How many books about salt are there that a whole word had to be constructed for holography, a book about salt? I remember a popular book a few years back called Salt, and it really was about the history of salt. And I thumbed through it. I haven't actually read it. I'd love to because it may sound rather dry, but to me it's fascinating how salt had been used throughout the years for different things. So that would be a piece of holography. The book Salt. A book about salt. Wow. Try to use that this week. Let's go, what do you got there? What are you reading? Fiction, nonfiction, maybe a little holography. And then we'll go, what's that? And it's a book about salt. What? Why would I be reading holography? Well, so yes, nimbos, cloudy, stormy, holography, a noun that means a book about salt. I like them both a lot, but one, as you can see, you'll be able to use more often than not. I'll enjoy trying to fit holography into my conversation this week, and that brings me to what. Oh, this is going to be controversial. It is. It's going to be, we're going to have a little conversation about this one, all right? But I got to tell you, I have to admit, this is what I enjoyed this week. Oh, look at this guy. He's not worried. Even though it's looking nimbos outside, he's fine. Doesn't even have an umbrella. He's throwing caution to the wind there. And as you can see, he's got a book with him. And and it's titled, it's titled Saline and Its Many Uses. And, well, my gosh, if that's not... would that count as holography? Salty liquid? You know what? I'm going to say it is holography. All right. This is quite... you know, the movie Salt with Angelina Jolie, not considered holography. That's considered... Holinema. That's cinema about salt. Oh boy. Ugh. I hope you're still here with me because I do want to talk about what I enjoyed this week. And again, Some of you are going to hear it and go, are you kidding? Are you nuts? And others will go, okay. And but I can't help it. It is what I enjoyed this week. It's a book that has made some news and probably will for a while. I read the book Apropos of Nothing, which is Woody Allen's autobiography, and I loved it. Now, here's why this is controversial if you don't know. He's obviously been accused of some pretty heinous activity, but that's just it. He's been accused. He's not been found guilty. I'm not going to take sides here. There's an HBO documentary out currently that's Mia Farrow's side of things. And apparently it's pretty damning to Woody. And Woody's book is, I can tell you, as somebody who's read it, pretty damning against Mia. So what I like to do when stuff like this happens is look at both sides. So I will watch that documentary, and I've already read Woody's book, and I will decide on my own. I think I can pretty much tell you what my decision is, and that is, essentially, we will never know the full truth. I think in these kind of cases, we just don't know. Now, what I will tell you is, first off, you might be going, why did you read that book? I've always been a fan of Woody Allen, and I'm also a student of comedy, and I wanted to read about particularly him coming up through the golden age of television and through the early club scenes. Well, I shouldn't say early. What I'll say is the comedy club scenes of the 60s and 70s and doing talk shows and stuff. So I was just really fascinated in the history and his history. I did not read this book to read about the allegations against him and the drama with his when he was dating Mia Farrow and then he got married to her adopted daughter Soon Yi, and I didn't care that much about that. I wanted to read about him making movies and doing comedy and writing comedy in the golden age of television. So obviously that other stuff is in there, and it is interesting, but that's not why I picked the book up. Now, the facts of the matter are that Woody was accused of sexually assaulting, one of Mia's daughters, and a girl that he had had a large part in raising. He really loved this girl. And helped raise her. And then what was I trying to say here? So here's what happens. He starts seeing Soon Yi. And according to Woody, she's out of college. She's of age. And as unorthodox and questionable and sort of surface level creepy as it is, or as it may seem, he starts a relationship with Soon Yi, and when Mia finds out about it, she loses her mind, and she's very angry about it. Now, according to Woody, he and Mia were already way on the outs. They weren't married, they weren't living together, nothing like that. They never did get married or live together. And their romance had all but fizzled. He said, you know, he kind of says, I couldn't help it. She and I fell in love. Soon Yi and I fell in love. And there was nothing really, as weird as the relationship may seem, there was nothing inappropriate about it. Although you could argue he had not, quote unquote, broken up with Mia. They were having an affair, Soon Yi and he. So Mia finds out, is really mad, and tells Woody, I am going to get my revenge. Really does say this to him. And he says, well, what are you going to do, kill me? And she goes, no, what I'm going to do is much worse. And so then these allegations came out that he had inappropriately, well, he had assaulted Mia's daughter, Dylan. Now, Dylan was so young at this time that what Woody says happened is that Mia, as she had potentially done in the past, completely manipulated Dylan into not only saying that Woody had done inappropriate things with her, but believing them. Woody says that he believes, Dylan totally believes what she's saying. And he says she's a good kid, but she was manipulated from a very young age to believe that this happened, and it just didn't. And he offers up in his book plenty of evidence to back his story. Now, according to people who have watched the HBO documentary, Mia and those folks offer up plenty of evidence suggesting that he is guilty. So, I just don't know what I don't know that we'll ever have the answers. Now, one of the reasons I wanted to talk about this is because, first off, I enjoyed the book. It's informative. There's great insight into his career, and it's funny, man. Woody Allen. Maybe you don't care for his humor, and that's totally fine. I've always been a fan, so it made me laugh numerous times on like every page. Except obviously when it gets to this stuff, those aren't as comedy heavy as some of the other things. But he's funny. He's self-deprecating. He's sharp, and clever, smart. It's just silly. I really, really enjoyed the book. But I think what I'd kind of like to talk with you about it and is this idea of how there's a lot to unpack here. What did happen? We're probably never going to fully know. And should an artist's work be judged on their behavior, the allegations against them? I mean, it's a really interesting conversation. I don't have the answers. And quite honestly, I go back and forth on a lot of this. Look, Bill Cosby himself is arguably one of the greatest hours of stand-up ever filmed. And are we still allowed to watch it and enjoy it? Now, the thing with Bill is he was found guilty and is serving time. So you can look upon that differently than with Woody, who there were two major investigations into these allegations by very credible organizations who found that there was absolutely no evidence that he's guilty and that there is evidence of manipulation and lying. And so if we're to look at those, Woody Allen is innocent. Now, the argument is, those organizations didn't treat this fairly because of who he is, or that kind of thing. So, which I have no doubt has happened historically. There have been some cases out there that have been swayed by celebrity and money and perhaps even more nefarious things, threats. But if we just take it at face value, this has been investigated twice, and both times it has come back as zero evidence against Woody and some evidence against Mia Farrow. I'm not saying that that's the case because I have no idea. So I don't want you to think that I am that I'm necessarily defending Woody Allen. I'm just telling you what he said, and I'm telling you what these investigations said. I also don't want you to think that I am dismissing accusations or allegations and that they shouldn't be heard. They absolutely should be heard. Of course. But I'm also one of those guys, I tend to be a little more patient than the majority of the public when it comes to this stuff. I can wait for investigations to come to a conclusion and then look at their findings and decide from there. Now, one of the most interesting aspects of this to me is that with cases like this, people want to believe one way or the other, don't they? Now, you could go, Josh, do you just, it sounds to me like you are doubtful that the events took place, that there was crime committed. And I am doubtful based on the findings of the investigations, not based on what Woody Allen told me by through his book. I do have doubts, all right? Somebody could fairly look at me and go, are you doubtful because you don't want him to be guilty? Well, because you're a fan of his? Okay, that's a good question. And the answer is, I'm not... I don't want him to be guilty because I'm a fan of his. I don't want him to be guilty because I don't want that crime to have been committed. I don't care that his movies I've enjoyed. I care for the human beings involved in this. I don't want it to be true because that truth is so ugly and so awful. That, of course, I hope that never happened. I really do hope that never happened. That said, Dylan Farrow, I do think that she believes it happened, and what a tragedy that is. So the damage is already kind of done. Not to compare being manipulated with it actually happening, but aren't the effects pretty close? Like, isn't the end result very, aren't they similar? They're real close. If she couldn't remember the event, but it happened, and she has to live with that and deal with it and go, and work through that, isn't that almost the same? And I'm asking, I'm not suggesting, I'm legitimately asking, is that almost the same as that event never having taken place, but being told over and over and over again and being coached that it did happen? She still has the same trauma. She, isn't that, I don't know. It's a difficult thing. And I knew, and part of me even went, you know what? I don't have to talk about this book and how I enjoyed it or whatever. It could, but I'm not ashamed for having read it. And it's one of those things we just don't know the answers to. There are plenty of people out there that want him to be guilty. For different reasons. They think the guy's a creep. And look, Woody's guilty of something. He's guilty of having an affair with his girlfriend's adopted daughter. And he that's odd to say the least. He's guilty of smaller infractions that might have larger implications. The one in particular is he's often been criticized for casting beautiful younger women opposite him in romantic comedies. Now, to me, that's a weird, and I remember getting into a debate about this with a professor of mine in school. The class was ethics and media, and she was going on and on about how wrong it was for Woody Allen to cast younger, beautiful actresses opposite him, because her point was it was so unrealistic. And she thought that it was a bad thing. That she thought that what she was saying, that what Woody was saying, was that to be old and slightly less attractive than the women that he was casting, that he was being critical of those women. So let's say, and so I raised my hand and said, aren't you guilty of being, aren't you guilty here? What you're suggesting is that Woody is too ugly and old to date a younger, attractive woman. And I mean, that's the assertion. So you're accusing him of showing some sort of prejudice when really you're showing prejudice by saying Woody is too old and ugly to get these women. And she did not care for this at all. She got mad at me, my professor, and she said, no, that's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying it's unrealistic. And I said, and that it shouldn't happen. And I said, okay, so when you're in a restaurant in real life and you look over and you see an older man who you don't find attractive with a younger woman who you do think is attractive, you think that's wrong. And I really caught her ire with that. And I'm not saying that I'm 100% right in this. I'm just saying it seemed weird to me. And I said, look, if I were to come in here and say, you know what, it's so unrealistic that Barbara Streisand cast Jeff Bridges or Robert Redford or Ryan O'Neal opposite her, because they're such handsome men. Isn't that unrealistic? She would have lost her mind on me. She would have said, well, what are you saying? That that Barbara Streisand's ugly and old and therefore couldn't get these so-called handsome men? And she didn't like that either. She goes, well, I never would have said that. And I said, well, you're saying it about Woody Allen. And by the way, I don't remember if the accusations against Woody regarding Mia Farrow's daughter had come out yet or not. I don't know. Can we all just kind of admit we don't know? And that in not just this case, but in many cases that we don't know. It's hard. And that we have a bias for one reason or another as to what we want to happen, what we think is also kind of what we want. There are people out there that want Woody Allen to be guilty. I don't get it, because I never want any heinous activity like that ever to take place. I don't want it to be true. But there are people out there that do. And maybe there are people out there also who want him to be guilty, so they can go, see, this is a problem that needs to be addressed. There are men out there taking advantage of their position who need to be, this can't happen. And you're right. This kind of stuff can't, shouldn't, and hopefully will no longer happen. But if somebody's innocent, and again, we don't know for sure, but the investigations have been done and they show innocence. If somebody is declared innocent not just by one organization, but others, because let's remember, OJ was found innocent. But I think if that case had been run a couple times, he wouldn't have been found innocent every time. And in fact, in civil court, there were things there that, where he was found guilty. So, I think we have to listen to the investigation. I think, you know, it's tough. And I hope you don't mind having this conversation with me, because we shouldn't be afraid to talk about it. This stuff should be discussed. Now, there are people out there that would find it, that don't think, you know, that these things need to be discussed in hushed tones. I think that's antithetical to what we're trying to do, and that's to raise awareness and to if justice needs to be served, let it be served, all that stuff. So I think what's going to end up happening is that nobody's minds are going to be changed, all right? The people that want him to be guilty are going to say he's guilty. The people that want him to be innocent are going to say he's innocent. And then there are going to be some people like me who go, I don't know, and I'll never know, but I'm going to err on the side of the investigations. And that's me. I that's just how I am. If you don't agree with me, I respect you. I do. But that's just that's where I'm at. And if you are interested in Woody Allen's career at all, read the book. It's there's some really good stuff in there. So, I thought today I'd get to some of your questions, and we can have a little visit with that. Some fun questions here, some career questions. Let's just get right to them. Who is it? Jake. Jake writes in, and he says, Zack Snyder's Justice League was released. So, if you don't know this story, Zack Snyder was directing Justice League a few years back, and there was a family tragedy, and he bowed out after he had done a significant amount of shooting. And Joss Whedon came in and reshot a fair amount of stuff, and they put out Justice League. Well, it didn't go over too well, and fans demanded they see the Zack Snyder cut, the original vision of the man who had directed Man of Steel and Batman versus Superman. They wanted to see this his version. So Zack Snyder got all his footage together, and maybe a little bit of new footage. I'm not too sure on that. And put together his cut, his vision, and it was released. Well, Jake says, what movie would you want a re-release of to improve upon it? So if there's another cut of something out there, what would you like to see? He recommends the movie Fury, which I'm ashamed to admit I've not seen yet. It's right up my alley. I love it's about the World War II tank thing, and it's got Brad Pitt and Shia LaBeouf and a terrific cast. And he says that he thought they could it could be much longer. I can't attest to that because, as I said, I haven't seen it. But I read recently, and I was aware of this, but I recently read an update on this. I think what I would like to see of this type, there have long been rumors that there have been many cuts of the movie Mrs. Doubtfire, a comedy that I think is nearly perfect. That is a terrific, terrific movie. It's sweet. It's funny. It's just great. And, there has been long been rumored that there was a PG cut, a PG-13 cut, an R-rated cut, and an NC-17 cut, because Robin Williams would improvise so much on set that they got so much footage, and some of it was family appropriate, as the movie is, and some of it was way dirty and adult oriented, and so they ended up having four cuts of this thing. And they released it as, you know what, as I'm talking, I'm going to look it up. It was either released as PG or PG-13. I'm going to guess PG-13. Let's see if I'm right. Let's see if I'm right here. It was released as PG-13 because there is some, that's one of the great things about that movie. Plenty of stuff for the kids, plenty of innuendo and stuff for the adults. Everybody has good laughs, and Robin Williams was just so anyway, you can imagine that he had fun, and at times got very not family friendly. Now, the director, Chris Columbus, has recently come out and said there was never an NC-17 cut. So and just real quick, I almost did not say cut there because the word NC-17 had been bounced. And when I say NC, like, it's like, what's so dirty that it would garner an NC-17? What words are so bad? That was going through my head as I said the word cut, and I almost totally messed up. So anyway, if that didn't make sense to you, you're a better person than I am. So I think some of you, though, picked up on what could have just happened. Anyway, He said there was no NC-17 cut. However, there was an R-rated cut. So my answer, Jake, I would like to see the R-rated cut of Mrs. Doubtfire. I don't know that it'll ever be released, but I would certainly give it a look because I bet it's hysterical. And now, would I want that to be the finished version, the end-all, be-all version of Mrs. Doubtfire? No. I love it just the way it is. I love that it's a family film. but I am curious, and I bet I would howl at an R-rated cut of Mrs. Doubtfire. A fun question. And that's my answer. Let's see here. Christopher. Boy, I'm going to say your last name, man, because this is Christopher Steele. Isn't that a good name? Christopher Steele, Private Eye. Chris says, or as he likes to be called, Steel Man. He says, I wanted to know when you knew that you belonged on the Bob and Tom Show. And the opposite. Has there ever been a time you felt that you didn't belong there? Wow. That's a strong question. I'll start with the first part. I wanted to know when you knew that you belonged on the Bob and Tom Show. The answer is technically I knew I belonged on the Bob and Tom Show when Tom hired me. Now, what I mean by that is I consider Tom to be a radio genius. And I think many other folks do too. He really, as much as on the big show, it may seem like he doesn't know what he's doing, or it may seem like he's blathering, or he's not focused, or he's trust me, he lives and breathes this show and radio, and he knows what works and what doesn't and what's good and what isn't. And sometimes he'll break his own rules for the sake of comedy or just to be ornery or whatever. But he is a radio genius. So when he hired me, I was not convinced I belonged, but the fact that he wanted me, I erred on the side of genius. I said, okay, that guy knows what he's doing. He's not going to mess up what he's worked so hard to build. And I trust his opinion. So if he thinks I belong, I must belong. Now, there are still days where I go, I have no business being here. But that's me. I oftentimes feel like an imposter. If I'm performing stand-up to a room of to a sold-out comedy club or a theater with 1,500 people in it, I always say, boy, have I fooled I have no business being here. I'm an imposter. What were these people thinking when they paid money to see me? That kind of thing. But I can't help it. That's just kind of, I think that sort of self-doubt, I think every good performer has that. I think, or at least should, and it varies in degrees, you know? Some guys have a little bit of it, where they go, oh man, I hope I can give these people a good show tonight. And then they go out and they give them a great show. And then some go, oh, this is I can't do it. I shouldn't be out there. I shouldn't be here. This is ridiculous. Oh my gosh. Now I'm not either one of those. I'm probably closer to the guy who goes, I hope this goes. I hope I can do these people good. Than I am the guy going, oh, I can't do it. But, so on the show, there are days where I go, well, I had no business being around, people as funny as that. And then there are days where I go, I was the funniest one. So it changes. So by the way, I don't want you to ever think that we are competing on the Bob and Tom Show, because if that were the case, the show would be a way bigger mess than it already is. We are all, for the most part, the most fun about the show. It's great to get a big laugh, but is playing with everybody else. You know, if I know that Chick has a running bit, it's so fun to lead him into that so that he can knock the punchline out of the park. It's great. That's a lot of the most fun I have. Or if Godwin and I have this weird. Well, maybe I've talked about on the air on this podcast about sort of a comedy sixth sense that somebody you can sense. I can sense that Godwin's got a killer line, and if I have a line that I want to get out, a joke, but I can see that I shut up. I don't get my line out. I let him, and he does the same for me. And Chick will kind of do when Chick's fully engaged, and I don't mean that as a shot to him, but there are times when we're just not fully engaged. He does the same thing. So, and Tom's good at it too. Look, it's just a cool thing. It's really fun to be a team as opposed to working individually. So when I say things like, oh, well, I was the funniest one, that's not really how we operate. good question. So, yes, there are times where I feel like I don't. You know when I kind of feel like I don't belong? Is when Bob is on. We'll have special shows. And Bob comes on. And maybe it's not a feeling so much of I don't belong here. It's more of a couple things happen when Bob comes on. I'm a lifelong fan. So I have a tendency to remove myself more than I normally do because I want to hear him and I want to listen to, I guess you could call it a classic show. Meaning Tom, Bob, Chick, and Christy. The four core are back together, and I want to get out of the way. The other thing is, I also want the audience to hear the classic show. So when Bob's back on, man, it's so great, and it's so rare now, but it's so wonderful that what am I going to do? Why am I getting in the way? Let the audience enjoy them just like I want to. So I do tend to back off a little bit. So I don't think it's necessarily a, hey, I don't belong here. It's kind of a, I don't need to belong here right now. I want to watch and listen to the original four. And, yeah, so those are days though. I just wanted to, it's my podcast. I can say whatever I want. And I just wanted to say that. What are you mad about it? So let's see here. what else do we have? Grant writes in, oh boy, another controversy. What am I doing? Talking about Woody Allen, talking about, media speculation and the public's response to it. I'm just tackling some tough issues here, and I'm going to tackle another one now. Grant says, what is your take on the Oxford comma? Oh, major controversy. He says, I know that I am strongly opposed to it. Grant. He says, it seems highly unnecessary to me. What's your opinion of it? If you are pro-Oxford comma, that's okay. I will just stop listening immediately and proceed to cancel you in every way possible. Well, Grant, I've got to be honest. I'm going to tell you now. Let the canceling begin, because I am pro-Oxford comma. I am. If you don't know what the Oxford comma is, it's the third. Well, no, it doesn't have to be third. The suggestion I'm going to give you are third. It's the comma used before the word and in a list of something, essentially. So if I say, oh, at the barbecue, we're going to have, and yeah, oh, food-related, Josh. Yes, all right. at the barbecue, we're going to have burgers, hot dogs, ribs, and chicken. Do you put the comma after ribs before and, or do you not? That's the Oxford comma there, before the and. I am pro Oxford comma. So I would write it, we are going to have burgers, comma, hot dogs, comma, ribs, comma, and chicken. Whereas Grant would write, hot dogs, comma, ribs, no comma, and chicken. Jason, don't speak. I don't like any other voices. You are anti-Oxford comma? Okay. Oh, isn't this fascinating? Wow. Now, if you look this up, there's no right answer here, technically, all right? It's a stylistic choice, which makes it all the more fascinating, I think. But whether it's because I was taught the Oxford comma growing up or not, you know, I was taught that it was the only way in grade school. I remember specifically. And then when I got to high school and college, I was taught, no, that's called the Oxford comma. It's not necessarily, it's a stylistic choice. What? There are people who don't use it. So I'm guessing my elementary school teacher, whichever one it was pro Oxford comma because she taught it as, and you put a comma before the and every time. So that's something about me. Pro Oxford comma. Thank you, Grant. A fun question. Todd asks, what are you reading now? Well, I just finished the Woody Allen book. And are there any favorites of yours you would recommend? He's an avid reader, he says. So I just thought, answering this question, I'll just tell you some of my favorite authors. When it comes to horror novels, some of my favorites are Stephen King, Jack Ketchum, Dan Simmons, Nick Cutter, and in terms of folks who are still writing, and then, Jack has passed away, but some of the older authors, Lovecraft, Poe, and Shirley Jackson, and so those are some of the, I love thrillers, I love crime, pot boilers, as they're often referred to, and if I'm in the mood for a good pot boiler, I'll go to James Ellroy or Michael Connelly, and I'm going to be leaving out some on this list as well. I also, when it comes to just really beautiful fiction or really strong, just you know, sort of award-winning fiction, I'm a big. I love Jonathan Franzen and. Michael Chabon, I may be mispronouncing his name. I apologize if I am. Tim O'Brien. There are so many. Raymond Carver. And then John Irving. When it comes to the classics, Jane Austen, Nathaniel Hawthorne might be my favorite. William Faulkner and... Dickens, and then when it comes to nonfiction, I've read mostly everything that Krakauer has done. He wrote Into the Air and Into the Wild, and I mean, there's just so much to list, but those are just a few. And that leads to the next question, which is, where is it here? Oh, here it is. It's from Levi, and he says, in the context of humor comedy, do you have a favorite book you could recommend? He says he's recently started reading again, thanks to me, and he has not read much in the comedy humor genre. Thoughts or suggestions? And I'm going to be honest, I have not read a ton of what would be called funny books, and I think it's because I'm a comedian, and I see so much comedy and I've heard so much comedy and I know so many very funny people that when I read, when I watch TV or movies, I tend to go to something like a cop procedural or a crime thriller or something like something that's the opposite of comedy because I want to explore that other world, you know, those other worlds. So, that said, there are some I can recommend. If you're looking for books about comedy, start with Steve Martin's Born Standing Up. It's funny, it's informative, and it's it really captures the essence of stand-up. If you want a book that is funny, I read one a couple years ago. I've never read any Douglas Adams, The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy and stuff like that. And I will eventually read those. But when it comes to comedy, I just don't jump right to them. I have read Larry Miller's got a great book out called, I hate when I do this. I rave about something and then I don't remember the full title. Spoiled Rotten Americans, I think it's something like that. But I love Larry Miller, so that's funny. That's really funny. The two Jim Norton books, the one particularly is hilarious. It's not the one called I Hate Your Guts. It's the other one. I should have done some research before I just answered this question. That made me laugh a lot. But what I will recommend is this thing. A friend of mine gave it to me, and he said he's a comedian named Matt Conte. Great guy. And he said every sentence in this book is a joke. And I went, oh, okay, he means it's funny. And no, he didn't. He meant exactly what he said. Literally. I would be hard-pressed to – boy, every sentence is a joke. And that might sound impossible, but it's pretty much true. It's very accurate. It's an accurate description. Now, don't read the book and then go, see, this sentence isn't a joke. Okay, 98% of the sentences in this book are a joke, and they're funny, and I laughed out loud so much reading it. It's a book called The Stench of Honolulu, and it was written by Jack Handy, most famous for writing for SNL, and particularly The Deep Thoughts by Jack Handy. Remember those? Of course you do. Deep Thoughts by Jack Handy. And it would just be a quick thought. I'm sure we all have our favorites. One I can remember is, isn't it a shame? isn't it a shame that a family can be torn apart by something as simple as a pack of wolves? That's so crazy. And then that's it. Like, that's all the deep thoughts were. And then another one was, when a child asks why it's raining, I like to say, because God is crying. And when the child says, well, why is God crying? I like to tell them, probably because of something you did. It's just these insane things. Just little weird musings. But the book isn't, it's got that sort of humor, but it's not just a series of deep thoughts. It's actually a narrative and stuff, and it's laugh-out-loud funny. The Stench of Honolulu. I would recommend that by Jack Handy. I mean, the title alone is funny. When you think of Honolulu, you're thinking sort of tropical paradise, but he didn't care for it. So the stench, not the smell, the stench, the suggestion being it's not good. Oh, yeah, okay. I should read that again. That should be one of those books I read every year. It makes me smile. Were there any other questions? Huh? You? No? You're good? Anybody else have anything? Okay. Well, what if I just did this for the next 10 minutes? I'm sure some of you are saying, well, it couldn't be any worse than what you have done so far. All right. I'm done with that. Here we go. Boy, what a mess. What a mess. What to work on? Oh, yeah. Okay. That's the next part of this podcast. Episode 25, and I'm still trying to figure things out. Let's just get right to what to work on this week. All right. I hope you guys had a good time. I certainly did. That might be why I'm frazzled, because I was having fun. That's happy music, because what to work on this week should be something happy. Now, this does deserve a preface, all right? I'm not going to get right to what it is we should work on, because I want to tell you a couple things. First is, I am pregnant. No, this is the 25th episode of the That Josh Arnold podcast. And it's also the final episode of season one of That Josh Arnold Podcast. What does that mean? Well, it means that season two is coming up, and that will begin in May. So season one is will be ending as soon as I awkwardly end this one, this episode. And season two will begin May 4th. That's Star Wars Day. So, well, Josh, what are we going to listen to on Tuesdays or whenever through the month of April? Don't worry. There will be 4 weeks of something I think you're really going to like. You haven't heard them, and I think you're going to really enjoy it. So there will be four episodes, but they won't necessarily be technically episodes of That Josh Arnold Podcast. They will be a conversation, and you will get to be a part of it. So you will have something to listen to each and every week in April, and it will be new, and it will be fun and funny and interesting and maybe even emotional. So I think you're going to dig it. That said, please subscribe to my podcast. I didn't realize the importance of this. Many of you have, and I really appreciate it. And if you haven't, please subscribe. All it does is it lets you know when a new episode's up. So definitely subscribe. And what I want to do real quick is thank you for listening to this thing. One of the reasons that I decided to separate the show into seasons is over April. Yes, each week you're going to be getting something new, but that thing will have been recorded in one chunk and then separated into four. Well, for lack of a better term, we'll call them episodes. So I'm kind of taking the month of April off from the podcast because when I started this thing, I didn't really know what it was going to be. I knew I had a couple segment ideas, and I knew I wanted to visit with you and talk with you, but I didn't really know. And quite honestly, I still don't totally know what I want this thing to be, but I do have a better idea. And so I'm going to implement those, what I think are better ideas, starting in season two. And so there will be some differences. Some things will be the same. The construction, as I've been saying, is nearly done. And I look forward to introducing you to all of that in May. That's so what I'm getting to here in my usual clumsy way is I want to thank you guys so much for giving this podcast a shot and for listening. Maybe this is your first episode. Thank you for trying it. And if you've stuck around, if you've listened to every one or you've listened to a couple or 15 out of the 25, my gosh, it genuinely means so much to me that you want to spend some time with me. And I love spending time with you and look forward to more of it. Thank you. Thank you guys very, very much. Keep writing me, joshpodcast@bobandtom.com. And we, like I said, some fun stuff the next 4 weeks. And then season two of That Josh Arnold Podcast. What to enjoy this week is going to eat itself a little bit right here. What I want you to enjoy this week, or work? That's not what to enjoy. My God, can you tell I need a break? This is another reason that I'm taking a month off, just to give the brain the what happens. Look, it's not an excuse, but it's a reason. What happens is I do this podcast essentially right after the morning show. So this is like hour five and a half of me talking and using my brain, and it's just too much. So my feeble mind can't handle this much. Anyway, what to work on this week is I want you to, over the next month, and actually, so it should be, good God. Let me just take a breath and start what to work on this month, all right, for the next 4 weeks. I would like for you to enjoy something that you have always wanted to enjoy, but you haven't. So, if you've never seen The Godfather, but you've wanted to watch it, if you've never read The Catcher in the Rye, but you always have, if you've never binged The Crown, but would you love to be part of the conversations all your friends are having about it, do it. Take this month to read a book that you've always wanted to read, watch a movie you've always wanted to watch, listen to an album, look at some art, anything like that. Do it. Do it in April. And when we come back in May, I'll try to remember to tell you what it was that I decided to enjoy that I hadn't before, whether it be a book or binging a show or watching a movie, whatever. Maybe I'll do all three or four. Listen to an album. I've never listened to Abbey Road top to bottom. So, you know, something like that. Go ahead and do that. And I'd love to hear what it was that you decided to enjoy and whether or not you did indeed enjoy it. So thank you guys again. I don't know in season two if we will have proper endings to the podcast, but I guess we'll just have to see you.